Hello everyone. In the last session, we looked at fertilizers, its nutrient composition, and its role that it has played in the agricultural industry. In this session, we will be looking at how do we market and distribute fertilizers in India, and what are the various regulations and policies put forward by the government to control the usage of fertilizer to an optimum level. Marketing of fertilizers is basically regulated under the Fertilizer Movement Control Order, or the Fertilizer Control Order as it is popularly known, and the Essential Commodities Act. Under the Essential Commodities Act, the fertilizer is supposed to be made available even when the country is going through a crisis situation. We have seen a similar situation during the current COVID times, that fertilizers were actually coming under the Essential Commodities Act and it was made available to the farmers during the pandemic situation so that the crop yield does not go down and we ensure that food items reach everyone. Since the manufacturing cost of fertilizer is high, it is made available to the farmers at a low price with the help of government subsidies. In 1944, the government of India had established a centralized fertilizer pool as the official agency for distribution of all available fertilizers at fair prices throughout the country. All fertilizers, whether they were domestically produced or imported, were pooled together and distributed through state agencies which reported into this centralized fertilizer pool. In 1966, manufacturers were given, or rather allowed, 50% of their production to be marketed by themselves. In 1969, they were given complete freedom in marketing and distribution. However, immediately after that, in 1970s, we found out that there were a lot of shortages and several malpractices happening in the fertilizer segment. To control this, the Fertilizer Movement Control Order was formed in 1973. In the mid-1970s, the supply and distribution of fertilizers were completely regulated under the Essential Commodities Act. Manufacturers were allocated certain quantities of fertilizers for various states and they had to accordingly plan their supply. It was essential to take this step so that manufacturers do not overburden a state with a particular fertilizer and create shortage in some other locations. This was important as any form of malpractices would directly impact the farmer and the monetary situation of the farmer, and also the yield of a particular product or product variety in the farm. After 1992 August, all potassium and phosphate based fertilizers were completely decontrolled. So the manufacturers were given complete freedom to market and distribute these kind of fertilizers in the manner they wanted. Along with them, ammonium sulfate, calcium ammonium nitrate and ammonium chloride were also completely decontrolled. Only urea remained to be under complete control as it was one of the most consumed fertilizer in the country at that point in time, and even today. With effect from 1st April 2003, the government implemented the new fertilizer policy. This policy allowed urea manufacturers to market 25% and subsequently 50% of their production outside the purview of distribution control, which basically meant if 100 kilos of urea was produced by a company, initially they were allowed to sell 25%, and after some amendments, they were allowed to sell 50%, or rather 50 kilos of the produced urea through their own distribution channels and not through the controlled and monitored channel that the government had proposed. This was an important step as monitoring the distribution of urea was very, very important from the government standpoint. Since urea was the most consumed product in the country from the farmer's perspective, there was always a fear of shortage in certain states and a fear of excessive usage in certain others. Either of these conditions would directly impact the crop yield and therefore impact the food security problem of this country. This diagram very clearly shows the various distribution channels that fertilizer markets or fertilizer manufacturers can actually take to reach out to the farmers. It's a very simple process. There is a manufacturer and a farmer. Everything that goes in between is your distribution channel. Now, the manufacturer can either give to a state cooperative marketing federation, which is present in almost every state in this country, They can also give to the state agro industries corporation or the state commodity federations. There are several such federations that or other organizations that are operating in various states. They are not present in all, but several other, some of the major agrarian states will see these companies coming up. They can also go directly to the marketeers, which are their wholesalers or distributors, and they can set up stores or retail stores to give out to the farmers. Another channel of distributing directly to the farmers is when they have their own outlets. In certain states like Punjab, where agriculture is still one of the major sources of income, manufacturers of fertilizers have direct or own depots and outlets where they can reach out to the farmers directly. Now, this particular channel may not necessarily be helpful for several other states where the necessary infrastructure is not in place. The most used channel are either this channel 1, where State Cooperative Marketing Federation is giving it to the district level cooperatives, from the district level to the village level cooperative societies, and from there to the farmers. The other most used methodology is that of the Agro Industries Corporation or the Commodities Corporation. From there, they go to service centers, and from the service centers to the farmers. It is ideal to use these, as these organizations have a grassroots level presence, and they also at times, the officials in such organizations act as influencers for the farmers and help in more uptake of the fertilizers. Now let us look at the pricing policy of fertilizers. It is a very, very important part of the fertilizer marketing policy to understand pricing. Like the initial part of the session, I had informed you that making a fertilizer is a very costly affair, and that is why the government gets involved in it by way of subsidy so that the farmers can get it at an affordable rate. But even with all of these, we need to have a specific policy to control the pricing of fertilizers and ensure that the farmers in any way are not paying a hefty amount for the fertilizer that will actually help them in their farm. Now, there is a high-powered committee that is formed. It's called the Fertilizer Pricing Committee. Now, this particular committee was formed to recommend or rather look at certain practices as far as the pricing policy is concerned and to change certain practices which were not beneficial. They created a uniform normative referral price and fixed it for the existing gas-based urea manufacturing units and also for the manufacturers of DAP. By fixing up this referral price, they ensured that the farmers get the fertilizers at a rate which is affordable for them, and the companies or the manufacturers' return on investment is also taken care of. A separate feedback differential cost reimbursement system was put in place, and it had given a period of 5 years for non-gas based urea units to figure out the distribution or the demand plan and accordingly reimburse these manufacturing units for the expenses that they incur. Now, with a view of protecting the interest of the farmers and the other agrarian employers or laborers, fertilizer pricing was directly regulated by the Government of India. Now, these prices are fixed at a low level so that it encourages farmers to use fertilizers more and more in their field. And it also helps in increasing the agricultural productivity. But at the same time, these prices were also fixed with a view that whatever subsidies are given by the government takes care of the return on investment for these manufacturers. Now, fertilizers have to be sold at a uniform price, and the selling prices are notified by the Government of India for various fertilizers. It is not possible that an RCF will sell urea at a particular price and the Ranipet facility will sell urea at a very different price. It will not be fair for the respective geographical regions which will be consuming urea from each of these manufacturing units. Hence, the government suggests a uniform price across a particular type of fertilizer. For example, all urea-based fertilizers will be priced in a similar manner, Ammonium sulfates will be priced in a similar manner. Diammonium phosphates will be priced in a similar range. Under no circumstances can the same chemical component containing fertilizer be priced under different ranges. This is to ensure that farmers find it easy and have greater access to these fertilizers. The policy prescribes the quantity of fertilizer allocated to different geographical zones in the country. It also takes into consideration the freight charges, that is the transportation charges, the distribution margins. The manufacturers also have to take care of the various policies that have been put into place. Now, when the pricing is prescribed, the policy, what basically it does is that it gives a specific quantity for manufacturing. It assigns X number of kilos or tons to a particular manufacturing unit, and it says that its production cannot exceed that number of tons. Now, this number is arrived at by looking at the farmer population, the agricultural setup, the past consumption rates, and all of this is analyzed and a particular demand number is come up to. Based on this number, every manufacturing unit gets a limit of manufacturing of a particular fertilizer. Along with this quantum or volume limitation, they also get certain standards for freight charges, distribution charges, and several other expenses that they may incur. Manufacturers have to strictly comply to these limitations and they cannot exceed beyond this. In case a manufacturer exceeds or incurs expenditure beyond this level, it will not be subsidized by the government and the expense will be completely on the manufacturer. This particularly helps the manufacturer also to think from a perspective of saving maximum expenditure and giving maximum value output. And it increases the efficiency of the manufacturing process. Now, the government, based on all these policies, they determine a retention price that is payable for the fertilizers. Now, based on these retention price, they will see whether a fertilizer unit is eligible for a subsidy as per their scheme or not. The apex body which takes care of all these subsidies are called the Fertilizer Industry Coordination Committee. It processes or rather it fixes the retention price and its implementation in the market. The retention cost, which is the variable cost, the fixed cost, and the return on investment for the manufacturer, is paid to the manufacturer by way of subsidy. Here, the committee takes care of the pricing for the farmers by fixing it at a lower maximum affordable level, and whatever the manufacturer incurs over and above with a specific percentage of return on investment so that they also make profits is given to them by way of subsidy. This helps the government to keep the prices of the fertilizer in check, but at the same time it ensures that the viability and the sustainability of the manufacturing units is maintained. Effective from 1st April 2010, the government has introduced a nutrient-based subsidy for the fertilizer manufacturers. Now, this subsidy is being paid annually. Practically all fertilizers that the Indian fertilizer manufacturers manufacture in their plants, all of them come under the NBS facility apart from urea. Now, the government is buying fertilizers at a high price from the manufacturers and they are made available to the farmers at a low price. Now, we need to understand the impact of this. Like I said, the fertilizers need to be affordable to the farmers. Government is taking up the expenditure of these manufacturing units, incurring losses so that the farmer can get these things at a lower price. The sale prices of the controlled fertilizers are fixed by the Department of Agriculture and Cooperation under the Fertilizer Control Order of 1985. It is also as per the Essential Commodities Act of 1955. So according to these two policies or these two acts, essential commodities cannot be charged beyond a particular limit. If they are charged beyond a particular limit, the government has to take corrective actions against the manufacturers. And there are specific controls and measures and monitoring mechanisms put in place to ensure that the charges for such or the sales prices for such products do not cross a particular limit and it does not become extremely unaffordable for the end customers. Fertilizer, being a part of the essential commodity, also follows these norms. Their sale prices are controlled by the Department of Agricultural Cooperation. It also gets controlled as per the policies of FCO and Essential Commodities Act, thereby ensuring that the farmers are getting these fertilizers at the lowest possible and the most affordable rates, whereas the companies which are manufacturing them are also getting the returns from there. There is another mechanism called a direct benefit transfer. Now, this scheme was introduced by the government for fertilizer subsidy payments. Under the DBT scheme, 100% subsidy for various fertilizer grades was released to the fertilizer companies on the basis of the actual sales made by the retailers or the beneficiaries. Now, here, the direct benefit scheme or the direct benefit transfer simply said that basis the number of units of a particular fertilizer that you sell at the grassroots level, the subsidy will be calculated according to that. Which basically meant, if I am incurring a cost of 10 rupees per fertilizer bag and I am able to spend of the 200 bags that I have created or rather manufactured and distributed in the system, I have only been able to sell 100 bags of fertilizers. So the subsidy that I will get will be for the 100 bags only. That is 100 into 10, 1000 rupees. This is a hypothetical example. Obviously, the numbers are pretty much larger than this. But what we need to understand is, by this direct benefit transfer system, the government has forced the manufacturers to ensure that the quality of their fertilizer is good enough so that there is good uptake, as well as their promotional efforts are efficient enough and they ensure that their product awareness is high in the market. If any company falls short on any of these parameters, obviously the direct benefit transfer amount that will come to them at the end of the year will be minuscule, and anything in excess of that will be a cost to them. By way of putting this policy into place, or rather putting this scheme into place, the government has actually ensured that they monitor the promotional efforts as well as the product quality of each manufacturer in a very, very microscopic manner. Now, there are certain constraints when it comes to fertilizer use. There are certain scenarios that we are coming across. First is the low factor of productivity. Like I said, since we have been using excessive fertilizers in our lands since the Green Revolution times, there have been a lot of factors that have impacted the soil fertility and productivity. There have been unbalanced use of fertilizers, which has led to residual matter, high acidity of the soil, high salinity of the soil. In certain areas, the efficiency of the fertilizer that is used is very low. We will look at the efficiency factor in the subsequent slides and you will understand this concept in a much better manner. Another greater challenge that we are coming across is that the fertilizer production of our country is at a particular level and it is not growing in tandem with both the food and the fertilizer demand that we are getting in the market. We need to understand here that the food and fertilizer demand of our country is increasing at a particular consistent rate without a break. But the production capacity of our plants or the manufacturers who are there in India, or for that matter the world, may not necessarily be increasing at the same rate. This is a major challenge for the fertilizer industry, and it also impacts the fertilizer pricing policy as it creates a shortage of supply when there is an increase in demand. There is a scope for biofertilizers. Like I told you, that chemical fertilizers, because of its excessive and undocumented use, has resulted in a lot of problems for a lot of farmers in the long run. Slowly and steadily, we are now going back to a little bit of organic roots from where we actually started our farming process. And that is where the biofertilizers come into picture. We are trying to now reuse organic manures or some form of organic matter that can be used to increase the nutrient component of the soil. Now, it is said that organic manures play a very, very significant role to the nutrient supply of a particular type of soil. It has also been observed that if organic manure is used along with certain mineral fertilizers, the efficiency of the mineral fertilizers increase in a multifold manner. Hence, there are several farmers in several pockets of our country who are actually now looking at using organic manure as well as mineral fertilizers in collaboration with each other, and thereby they have started increasing the productivity and the fertility of the soil. Environmental pollution is another major factor that is creating problem from the fertilizer industry. Now, the pollution of surface or underground waters due to fertilizers have been getting a lot of attention these days. Now, let us look at certain water bodies and how fertilizers are impacting these water bodies. There are four types of water bodies in any country. The first is a non-flowing, which are nothing but your lakes and ponds, which are water bodies enclosed by land on all sides, and they are stagnant water. Obviously, these water bodies are large in size, and it has a lot of aquatic life and vegetation inside it. Then there are flowing water bodies, which are rivers and canals. We have several rivers in our country, and most of these rivers have agricultural land on the banks of it. We have estuaries, which are nothing but the small rivulets or a river network system that is formed right when the river is meeting the sea. Bengal has a very wide network of river estuaries in the Madhuban area. Then we have the underground water source, which is nothing but the primary source of drinking water or potable water for us. Let us look at how fertilizers are actually impacting each of these water bodies and how fertilizers are actually creating problem in human life by impacting these water bodies. Now, both nitrogen and phosphorus in the fertilizers actually create eutrophication of the lakes or ponds, and it leads to excessive growth of aquatic plants and animals. Aquatic plants like algae. Now, when algae increases in number, it creates a form of shield on top of the water, which does not let the sun to enter the water. Unless and until the sun enters the water, the microscopic organisms will not be able to flourish. And unless and until the microscopic organism will not be able to flourish, the entire ecosystem of the static lake or pond suffers, and thereby a lot of aquatic animals which were living inside those lakes and ponds die. There are certain fishery segments or fishery industry segments that are reliant on lakes and ponds for certain fishes. Because of excessive usage of nitrogen and phosphorus related fertilizers, the lakes and ponds become unusable. In certain areas, these lakes and ponds can also become sources of drinking water for the rural population or the population living around them. But because there is a lot of algae, because there is a lot of hyacinths growing because of excessive nitrogen and phosphorus, these water bodies may not be necessarily usable for human population also. In flowing water, phosphorus creates a lot of problem. It is a limiting nutrient for plant growth in the flowing water. So underwater plants, which are there as a part of the river system, if there is a lot of phosphorus, it ceases the growth of these plants in spite of whatever amount of nitrogen is available to them. This again becomes a problem because even in rivers, there are aquatic life, which is important to maintain the quality of water in that river. Underground water, like I said, is the major source of our drinking water. And underground water suffers the most amount of pollution from fertilizers. This is said that in certain areas, because of excessive usage of a particular type of fertilizer, there are disorders like blue baby syndrome that has been seen. A state like Punjab, which has high level of agricultural occupation, has seen high levels of nitrates being ingested into their body through drinking water. and this has led to several health issues in people out there. Now, this is something that directly impacts our health. This is something that directly impacts our well-being. Now, this is water pollution. There is also air pollution, there is surface pollution, there is soil pollution. So there are so many different ways that fertilizers, which are chemicals in nature, are affecting us directly. Probably this is one of the major reasons why today organic farming or usage of organic fertilizers or biofertilizers has been recommended by several experts in the field of agriculture. Today there are several progressive farmers who are resorting to organic or biofertilizer usage so that they increase the soil fertility, but at the same time they are not impacting the society, the human and the animal flora and fauna, and the overall ecosystem of the area where they operate. Now, another important factor that we need to consider here is the nitrogen use efficiency. Urea, as we all know, is the greatest source of nitrogen for any product. In its ammonical form, it is not completely used, it cannot be utilized by the plant. So it is hydrolyzed. There is a chemical process called hydrolysis. When it is hydrolyzed, it forms into nitrite, and from nitrite it moves to nitrate. Now, any plant can only consume nitrogen in its nitrate form. And since urea has an ammoniacal form, it has a lot of tendency, it has to actually break down its molecular structure and become nitrate. Now, in this process, a large amount of nitrogen in its gaseous form escapes from the soil and the plant cannot absorb it, which basically means we are left out with a little amount of nitrogen which the plant absorbs, and the remaining chemical components are left as residue in the soil. Now, in this particular process, this process is called nitrification, and specifically for urea, the nitrification is pretty rapid. So generally, when the plants are able to recover certain portion of urea, if the nitrogen use efficiency of urea is not good enough, they will only be able to absorb 20 or 30% of the actual nitrogen component of urea, and the remaining will be left out in the atmosphere. This again is a very, very concerning factor, and hence it has also been recommended that urea usage be limited to a particular number. There is a specific process by which you can actually ensure that excess nitrification does not happen. There are chemicals that can be added to urea which are called nitrification inhibitors, but they are extremely costly and manufacturers prefer not to add them to the product as that will impact their overall pricing and return on investments. However, it has been come to notice that coating urea with a form of neem cake or neem oil prevents nitrification at a rapid rate, and it is a very good natural alternative which has been proven to be effective against nitrification. Similarly, there are many other researches being conducted to ensure that the nitrification process of urea can be slowed down as much as possible. However, natural alternatives are still being used and chemical alternatives still become costly. Now, how much does the NPK use ratio impact the environment? The ideal NPK ratio should be 4:2:1. That is, for every 1 gram of potassium, there should be 2 grams of phosphorus and 4 grams of nitrogen. That is an example. But look at the consumption rate for Punjab and Haryana. Punjab consumes for every 1 gram of potassium 6 grams, that is 3 times the phosphate and 20 times the nitrogen. This means that the nitrogen that goes into the soil is excess and it is not efficient, because whatever is put into the soil, only 20 to 30% is taken by the plant and the remaining goes into the atmosphere as gas. Similarly, in Haryana, for every gram of potassium, we are looking at 9 grams of phosphate and 30 grams of nitrogen. Such usage is absolutely inefficient and it directly impacts the quality of the soil and the yield of the plant. Since most of these nitrogen escape into the air or seep into the soil and go into the underground water, it results in multiple problems in human health. Consumption of excess nitrate or ingestion of excess nitrate may result in long-term health issues. Now, the Fertilizer Control Order in 1985, administered by the Department of Agriculture and Cooperation, has been issued under the Essential Commodities Act of 1955. This particular order lays down as to what substances qualify as fertilizers for the soil. There are product-wise specifications, there are methods for sampling, there are analysis of fertilizers that are conducted by the FCO. Any fertilizer that does not meet the specific specification cannot be sold in the country for agricultural purposes. Now, one of these being the nitrogen usage efficiency. The FCO, by putting in all these stringent methods, are also trying to ensure that the best possible formula of NPK fertilizer gets into the market with minimum environmental damage. The fertilizer recommendation for crops is also an important factor. In order to secure the maximum output for fertilizer, for response for the fertilizers, the crop should be irrigated immediately after the application. It is generally said that once you apply fertilizers, you should immediately water the plant, especially in terms of solid fertilizers. Liquid state fertilizers may not necessarily require immediate watering, as they may be dissolved in water or diluted in water before putting it in the soil. But solid fertilizers may not necessarily be mixed with water. They may be sprinkled on the sand, and immediately after sprinkling, there should be some form of irrigation or watering of the crops. And the watering or irrigation should happen at a suitable interval. It is advantageous to restrict the use of chemical fertilizers to irrigated lands and the areas of assured rainfall, which basically means where there is a lot of rainfall and where there is a higher concentration of irrigated lands, chemical fertilizers can be majorly used in those places. For areas which are dry, arid, which has very limited rainfall, which does not have a lot of irrigation facilities, chemical fertilizers are not ideal. Now, the reason being, for any chemical fertilizer to actually take action in the soil requires hydrolysis, and hydrolysis is nothing but using water to break the chemical bonds. Unless and until there is ample amount of water content in the soil, there will be no hydrolysis and the chemical fertilizer will remain as a chemical residue in the soil. Hence, areas which are dry and arid or which do not have suitable amount of rainfall may face a problem of soil quality deterioration. Now, from a maximum profit point of view for the use of fertilizer, we need to understand what will give the maximum response for a particular fertilizer. What does it depend on? First of all, the nature of soil. It also depends on the kind of crops that are grown. There are certain crops that require excess nutrition. There are certain crops that actually seep out the nutrition from the soil and it requires greater number of fertilization. For example, coconut. In the initial growth days, the coconut has to be given excess amount of cow dung, plant ash, and several other type of fertilizer methodologies. Even when the coconut is harvested, the coconut tree is harvested for the coconuts at a particular point of maturity, for newer coconuts to come again, there has to be a lot of fertilizer input. So depending on the kind of crop, your fertilizer input changes. The climate in which you are, like I just said, places where there is adequate rainfall are better for fertilizer usage compared to places where the rainfall is not that regular. Adequate supply of these nutrients in the soil is also important. There are certain soils, for example, red soil is extremely rich in certain chemical components and may not require those chemical components in the soil. It is said that red soil has good amount of iron. So putting trace element iron rich fertilizers into that soil is of absolutely no use, and there will be unnecessary residual formation. It is also important that the farmers follow something called crop rotation. In India, we have two major agricultural seasons like Kharif and Rabi, and every agricultural season has their own specific set of crops. There are certain crops that can be grown in either of these seasons, but it is always ideal for a farmer to perform a crop rotation. The same field which grew groundnut can later on be used for growing wheat or bajra. By doing this, there is a balance of nutrition seepage from the soil. Like if rice is consuming, or rather if wheat is consuming a lot of nitrogen or phosphorus from the soil, groundnut may not necessarily consume that much. And that is how it maintains a balance and ensures that certain trace elements or certain natural primary or secondary nutrient elements of the soil is rekindled into it. Prices of the fertilizer is also an important factor. If the prices are still not affordable, in spite of all the various government regulations, if the prices are still not affordable, there is no point that the farmer will actually purchase fertilizers and use it in his field. Now, how much fertilizer do we apply? For specific fertilizer practices in relation to particular crops and soils, the state agricultural department should always be consulted. So it is ideal for every farmer, before the crop season starts, to attend the workshops that these state agricultural departments conduct. During every Kharif and Rabi season, the district agricultural committee or the state agricultural department conducts workshops for farmers to make them understand how much fertilizer is to be used, what type of seeds are to be used, and what type of agri inputs will help them increase the yield of their product. Soil testing is an important part for fertilizer usage. Like I had said in the previous session, soil testing helps us to understand the nutrient percentage in every soil. We know that there are three types of nutrient: the major, secondary, and the minor nutrients. The soil testing helps us in understanding what is the level of each of these type of nutrients in the soil. It also helps us in understanding the pH level. pH level is nothing but the acidity or the basicity level of a soil. If the pH reading is below 7, it is considered to be an acidic soil, which basically means the plants will not grow properly in it, or the yield will be very, very low. If the pH is greater than 7, it is an alkaline soil, or it is a soil which has a lot of salty residuals in it. This again will create problem with plant growth itself. The ideal pH for a soil is 7, which is neutral. That is the pH for water. Obviously, not every soil will have the pH level of 7. There will be some minor ups and downs, but that is still acceptable. However, it is ideal for a farmer to ensure that the soil pH is maintained near 7. Anything above or below it will result in a direct impact on the crop yield and may also cause crop failure. So it is an important aspect of the farming practice to ensure that after every crop cycle, the soil is tested and accordingly the requisite fertilizer is used. In several states, there are village level soil testing centers, or taluka level or tehsil level soil testing centers. Farmers invite these technicians or these specific experts onto their farm, who collect soil samples, test them in the laboratory, and give them a report about the nutrient composition in these three categories. Basis the nutrient composition, they will also give them a recommendation on which type of fertilizer is supposed to be bought. This recommendation will help in balancing the nutrition level of the soil. This will help in ensuring optimum utilization of every form of fertilizer and avoiding excess usage and damaging impact on the soil quality and fertility. Soil health management is basically an activity or a scheme which is taken under the National Mission for Sustainable Agriculture. Its basic objective is to make agriculture a more productive activity. It needs or it aims to make agriculture a sustainable job, and it also aims to ensure that agriculture is climate resistant. Since climate is not in our control, at least by maintaining the soil health, we will be able to tackle climate uncertainties. Soil health management also looks towards conserving natural resources. The naturally available nutrients in the soil needs to be preserved and conserved. And for that, whatever activities are required needs to be done. So the SHM basically guides the farmers in how do they conserve natural resources in their soil. There are certain best practices laid down by SHM, and they provide training to the farmers or the respective agricultural bodies to ensure that these best practices are followed on the field. It also helps in utilization of water resources to an optimum level. Now, SHM basically tries to promote integrated nutrient management, which is INM, through various methods. It first looks at the judicious use of chemical fertilizers in collaboration with organic manures or biofertilizers to promote organic farming. SHM also, from its INM scheme or the INM process, looks at strengthening the soil and fertilizer testing facilities. They are also looking at developing infrastructure facilities for testing of soil at the very, very grassroot or last mile level. They are also looking at upgradation of skills and knowledge of their own staff as well as the farmers on the field. The SHM also tries to ensure quality control mechanisms for the fertilizers or manures or the biofertilizers that are used and that are prescribed by the FCO. Through this, they are trying not only to improve soil health or encourage farmers to take up soil management practices, but they are also strengthening their own staff and their own infrastructure requirements. The Soil Health Card Scheme is another scheme that is used in India for the farmers. Now, each farmer is supposed to get a soil nutrient status through a soil health card. Basis on the testing, the card is updated on the soil health details. And based on the soil health, the farmer is prescribed on what type and which dosage of fertilizers are required for his soil. This, in fact, helps the farmers to have a documented evidence of the soil health, and it can be constantly monitored by the various agencies working in the country to understand how has the soil health improved or deteriorated over the past few years. Now, licensing and certification of fertilizers is another aspect of this industry. No license is necessary for establishing a new fertilizer project or expanding the capacity of existing fertilizer plants. This is basically done to ensure that fertilizer requirement of our country is met with, and we ensure maximum fertilizer production and usage for our farmers. The procedural requirement to obtain a dealer license for trading in fertilizers are available with the Department of Fertilizers, and the process is relatively simple. So if you want to become a dealer in fertilizers, you have to contact or rather apply to the Department of Fertilizers, who will check your credibility and your knowledge and skill level, and accordingly they will provide you with a dealership license. This licensing and certification process, which is simplified for fertilizers, is specifically done so that the farmers can avail fertilizers as per their requirement. They do not have to rely on certain companies' distribution channels. They do not have to rely on certain dealers who may end up doing some malpractices and take up unnecessary time, resource and energy from the farmers while they can actually improve the crop yield and solve the food security issue of this country. Thank you so much.